Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and as we usually do, let's just come together, taking a few mindful breaths and dropping into silence together. This holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. And if we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that the Holy Spirit gives. We place the Holy Spirit in charge. And with the love in your heart and the light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. All right, so we have a fairly short, maybe not all that short, but a shorter section this evening. And if you have the Sparkle Edition, it is page 214. The subheading is Salvation and God's Will. If you have the original edition, which is published by the Course in Miracles Society, that is Chapter 9, Part 6, also called Salvation and God's Will. It's page 180. And if you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's page 175. The subheading is Part 7, The Two Evaluations. All right, so here we go. Salvation and God's will. God's will is your salvation. Would he not have given you the means to find it? If he wills you to have it, he must have made it possible and very easy to obtain it. Your brothers are everywhere. You do not have to seek far for salvation. Every minute and every second gives you a chance to save yourself. Do not lose these chances, not because they will not return, but because delay of joy is needless. God wills you perfect happiness now. Is it possible that this is not also your will? And is it possible that this is not also the will of your brothers? So I'll pause there for a moment. Just to, I guess, highlight the one sentence, well, sentences, the section that stands out to me in this paragraph is just how in the beginning it's talking about, you know, if God's will is our will and God's will for us is to awaken, is to be happy, of course he's going to give us the means to find it. And our brothers, it says your brothers are everywhere. And if you think about that, that the Holy Spirit is in our brothers, so the Holy Spirit is everywhere. There's opportunity after opportunity throughout the day as we have encounters with individuals to, again, choose to allow the Holy Spirit in us to touch the Holy Spirit in the other person. And so that sentence, that section stands out to me. Any thoughts, anything come up for anybody before we move on to the next paragraph? I like it too, how it says, we're not going to, if every minute and every second gives us a chance to save ourselves, it says, you know, do not lose these chances. It's not because they're not going to return. They're going to keep the chances, the opportunities will keep coming. It's simply that, why would we want to delay our happiness? And as we'll read, there's a sentence later on that talks about, you know, we don't want that happiness. We keep that happiness away because we want this, essentially. There's still something here that we think would be good to substitute for God.
Mm-hmm. I love the line that says he must have made it possible and very easy to obtain it.
Mm. Yeah.
I love the simplicity of that. But it also, I can feel the part of my ego that kind of pops up and is like, really? Like, that's, you know, there's that doubt. And then it makes me think of how the ego really is just this whole idea of having to work for something.
Right, right. It also, you know, I think ties into that feeling that I'm sure we've all felt before, that at times it feels, fear feels way more, it feels more powerful than God. Mm-hmm. It feels so much easier to get sucked into something than to just, you know, side with God, with love, and to stay there. That fear can feel more powerful.
I like the words you use, too, with that, because it's like, we do, we kind of like that intense, like, fucking in feeling, and we feel that, you know, it's like an obvious, like we're looking for that urgent, obvious sign that, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, this way, but the reality is peace is something you just soften into, and it just mm-hmm. is there, and it is easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It certainly is.
Mm.
Let's take the next paragraph. Consider then that in this joint will, you are all united, and in this only. There will be disagreement on anything else, but not on this. This then is where peace abides. And you abide in peace when you so decide. Yet you cannot abide in peace unless you accept the atonement, because the atonement is the way to peace. The reason is very simple and so obvious that it is often overlooked. That is because the ego is afraid of the obvious, since obviousness is the essential characteristic of reality. Yet you cannot overlook it unless you are not looking. This has a lot of good nuggets in it. So this first sentence, consider them in this joint will, you are all united. So in the joint will of love is where we are all united. There's going to be disagreement anywhere else outside of that, because anywhere outside of that is just the ego, which is really nothing. But there won't be disagreement in that, and so that's where peace abides. And I love how it says that next sentence, and you abide in peace when you so decide. It's not that word when really stands out to me, because it is simply a matter of when. We can postpone, we can delay, we can procrastinate, we can, you know, drag our heels, but as, again, we build up this trust muscle, as we keep having these experiences that there really is something that we can place our faith in, that decision we make sooner. So I that stood out to me. And it goes on to say, too, that, oh, I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say that the line, that is because the ego is afraid of the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious. This is the essential characteristic of reality. That's interesting.
That's exactly what I was going to say next, too. So that speaks to how it says elsewhere in the Course, too, that, you know, reality isn't hidden from us. It's there. It's ready. It's trembling with readiness to give us everything, and we're the ones that, you know, have really, you know, not so sure that we want it. So it's not obscure. It's very, very obvious. And yet, because we have chosen to listen to the voice of the ego and identify with that, it all of reality instead seems confusing rather than clear. Because the ego, again, doesn't know that reality. It can't. So we can overlook, we can't, when it says, yet you cannot overlook it unless you are not looking, I read that you as a capital Y, you. So again, the part of us that, the higher part of our mind that is the decision maker in terms of, you know, that choice to listen to the ego or to listen to truth. And so that higher part of our mind that knows truth cannot overlook reality unless it chooses to not look.
Mm. That's awesome. That's great. Great line.
Good stuff. Any additional thoughts so far from anybody? Anything coming up? We'll take the next paragraph. It is perfectly obvious that if the Holy Spirit looks with love on all he perceives, he looks with love on you. His evaluation of you is based on his knowledge of what you are, and so he evaluates you truly. And this evaluation must be in your mind because he is. The ego is also in your mind because you have accepted it there. Its evaluation of you, however, is the exact opposite of the Holy Spirit's because the ego does not love you. It is unaware of what you are and wholly mistrustful of everything it perceives because its own perceptions are so shifting. The ego is therefore capable of suspiciousness at best and viciousness at worst. That is its range. It cannot exceed it because of its uncertainty. And it can never go beyond it because it can never be certain. So let's pause there and see, again, if anybody has anything come up with any of the sentences in this paragraph, anything stand out, questions, comments, examples.
It's really interesting. He says he looks with love on you, and his evaluation of you is based on his knowledge of what you are, and so he evaluates you truly. And it just seems if when we're in alignment with the Holy Spirit, we evaluate ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
In this, you know, in a much more loving way.
Mm-hmm.
And when we aren't, you know, it's just the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The evaluation not only of myself, but maybe the people around me, when I'm in that kind of dark place, it just, I never really thought of it like that. So when you're looking on love, when you feel loving towards yourself, when you feel loving towards others, that's the Holy Spirit. That you're connected to the Holy Spirit in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're not connected
right.
to the Holy Spirit.
Right.
It really is
and
pretty simple, isn't it?
It is pretty simple.
And obvious.
And obvious, mm-hmm. absolutely. And there's also that piece, too, you know, how the Course distinguishes between special love and the holy relationship too, that special love, like our special love relationships, and they can be family, children, parents, spouses, boyfriends, girlfriends, you know, whoever, friends, best friends, those relationships are the ego's substitute for God. So we'll feel love in those instances, but there's a love that goes, that's much greater, that isn't, let's say, you know, dependent on, you know, maybe it isn't conditional. That's, you know, the word that comes forward that we might feel, you know, at times for somebody else. And it's by giving these relationships to the Holy Spirit that the purpose of the relationship becomes, it shifts from that special relationship into what can become a holy relationship. So that just came up for me when you were talking about, you know, about feeling love, because I think that definitely, you know, when we're feeling love towards others, you know, that's the truth of us. That's who we are, and yet it's even greater than just those special love feelings that we might feel for somebody. It even exceeds that. It's even greater. Does that make sense?
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, Corinne. In Nuke's book, The End of Death, she makes a really nice distinction between the two,
mm-hmm.
and it's love with a small L versus love with a capital L,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I really, really like that a lot.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. That's helpful.
Deidre, I thought of you this week.
Oh.
I have a neighbor who you would never guess was on any kind of a spiritual path. And we had a conversation on the phone this week, and she talked about, I don't know how we even got on the subject, but she talked about how she almost fell down she was going down into her basement, and the top step broke. And she said, I went down those steps perfectly. And she said, the angels literally picked me up, and I was not hurt in any way. She said, I really believe in angels, and you just popped into my mind.
Uh-huh.
I was shocked, because I never would have thought that this woman, you know, had any inkling.
Yeah, that's awesome. Spirit always
communicates
in the way that people can be receptive, so that's awesome.
That is awesome. I'll just share one other thought that came to mind as we were reading this paragraph, and that we previously read, I don't remember what chapter it was, but I know we read it already, just about how the Holy Spirit heals, and the Holy Spirit heals by looking into our minds and looking and seeing only what's true and looking past everything that's false. And as we were reading, that just came to mind for me again, and I immediately thought that it's as if, you know, the Holy Spirit, an aquarium came to mind, and how, let's say if, you know, we're the fish in the aquarium, we get, you know, totally preoccupied with, like, the glass and think that there's, like, lots of amazing things about the glass, and yet the Holy Spirit can see right through the glass, right through, you know, the ego stuff, the crap, straight to the truth of what we really are. So I just felt like throwing that out there, because that sort of came into my mind as we were reading. So let's take the next paragraph. Okay. You then have two conflicting evaluations of yourself in your minds, and they cannot both be true. You do not yet realize how completely different these evaluations are, because you do not understand how lofty the Holy Spirit's perception of you really is. He is not deceived by anything you do, because he never forgets what you are. The ego is deceived by everything you do, even when you respond to the Holy Spirit, because at such times its confusion increases. The ego is, therefore, particularly likely to attack you when you react lovingly, because it has evaluated you as unloving and you are going against its judgment. I'm going to read the next paragraph, too, because it sort of continues with this idea of the ego backlash. The ego will begin to attack your motives as soon as they become clearly out of accord with its perception of you. This is when it will shift abruptly from suspiciousness to viciousness, since its uncertainty is increased. Yet it is surely pointless to attack in return. What can this mean except that you are agreeing with the ego's evaluation of what you are? If you are willing to see yourself as unloving, you will not be happy. You are condemning yourself and must therefore regard yourself as inadequate. Would you look to the ego to help you escape from a sense of inadequacy it has produced and must maintain for its existence? Can you escape from its evaluation of you by using its methods for keeping this picture intact? So we'll pause there. So I'm wondering who else on the call has experienced an ego backlash at some point or another.
I have.
Yes. Does anything come to mind in particular?
Yeah, so as core students, we're trained to be defenselessness. Mm-hmm. So whenever I encounter a conflict where I recognize the other person is asleep to themselves and I don't react, mm-hmm. I will initially be like, oh, good job. And then a few minutes later, my ego will kick in and be like, can't believe you let her talk to you that way, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, I defeated the ego, but then the ego will creep in a few minutes later and kind of attack me for being a victim in that situation.
Right, right. Good example. So that moment when we feel that guidance come in and we choose, let's say, you know, to not react, like you said, and then, you know, those afterthoughts, which is what you're describing of the ego being like, what are you doing? You know, letting that person walk all over you. It makes me think, too, about how there's a part in the Course that says you might be guided to say things that end up feeling really embarrassing, but don't worry about it because, you know, you were guided to say it. And, you know, it's that after, those afterthoughts, those ego thoughts that we can tend to sort of get really tripped up with. And so... so that's a great example, Tony. Thank you.
You know, and it's insidious. I mean, it's throughout the day. It's I watch it. I watch my mind. And it's, you know, when I'm really in alignment, I can very easily say, oh, thank you for sharing, you know, mm-hmm. and just turn it off. Mm-hmm. But when I'm not, when I'm drifting... You know, it can really get a hold of you. But that's,
right.
I think that's where the workbook lessons are so powerful.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
I'll go back and refer to them throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And it really helps me, you know, to keep more centered.
I think what also comes up for me, too, because I used to get, you know, I would recognize an ego backlash, and then I found myself starting to feel somewhat fearful of progressing because I was like, well, what is my ego going to, you know, conjure up, and what is it going to do? Yeah. And then there's a line in the Course that I always just felt so comforted by, and it says that you're absolutely invulnerable to the backlash of the ego as long as you're siding with me. That's Jesus speaking. So, or you can think about it as the Holy Spirit. So that was always just so comforting to me that as long as we just consistently keep making that choice, you know, to bring whatever it is that we're seeing, feeling, thinking, you name it, to the Holy Spirit, then we're invulnerable to those backlashes. And when we get sucked into them, that's when page 90 is so helpful again.
Yes.
I must have decided wrongly. I love that.
I automatically thought of addiction when I was reading this paragraph because that's kind of anything that you can feel addicted to, right, with is coming from the ego. So it could be relationships, substances, you know, your computer, whatever it may be. And whenever you stop, you know, doing something that you're used to doing through the ego, it's like that urge intensifies, you know, for that very thing that you were using before to kind of distract yourself from that peace.
And Jen, I'm so glad that you're saying that because you know what comes up for me as I'm listening is our addiction to our thoughts, like our addiction to that chattering, busy mind, those compulsions, you know, to make the to-do list and organize and, you know, plan. And that's, you know, that's us addicted to the ego and wanting to keep going back to it also. So that pull for those, you know, those thoughts came forward for me as you were talking about addiction. So thank you.
And I almost feel like there's this, I have this ego part that's like, it tries to say that it's, you know, it's this loving part. And so it keeps me in situations with people who are maybe not treating me lovingly. I think we've talked about this in other calls about, you know, setting boundaries and things like that. And it's like this part that's posing as unconditional love, but knowing it's not unconditional love if it's not also being unconditionally loving towards me as well. Mm-hmm. So it like poses as it. So then once I set a boundary, I'll feel like this paragraph just made me realize like why I feel bad after I do that, because it's the ego's not happy. That ego part's not happy that I did that.
That's, yeah. This paragraph's totally reminding me of like the spiritual side of the ego. That's to me where ego backlash comes in. It's like you followed your guidance, but then the ego tries to get in there and make you doubt your guidance. And so I think that what backlash is for me, in my experience anyway.
Yeah, and, you know, the ego will be like, oh, you know, you're listening to the Holy Spirit and looking for guidance. Great, I can give you some of that too. So listen to me. We can be spiritual. We can look, you know, really good doing this. So that's another form, I think, too.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All right. Any other comments or questions or backlash examples or I can't think of anything specific off the top of my head. I know that I've had many, many, many examples of that sort of seeming backlash coming up, and yet if the seeming backlash arises, it's just another opportunity to bring that to the Holy Spirit, to look at it with Spirit. So it's nothing to be afraid of.
That's a wonderful way of putting it. That really, because no matter what it is, we can always turn it over.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Absolutely. And what are we doing? But we're just peeling another layer of the onion away. It's just another, if it's a seeming backlash, it's just another form of fear surfacing for us to look at with Spirit. So
it really is that guiltless, that feeling of guiltlessness. You know, that we're never guilty of anything.
Nope.
We've done nothing wrong.
Not guilty.
You know, the ego is that constant hammer that you did something wrong. Oh, something's wrong. Something's wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong. So tiresome.
It is tiresome.
It really is. It wears you out. It's like, this is one thing I love about living alone, because I'll just say, shut up. There it goes again.
I love, too, in the Course it says that we're really not capable of being tired, but we are capable of wearying ourselves.
Wearying ourselves.
So, again, just the idea that even being tired is part of the dream. Even that isn't true. But it's that strain of constant judgment that is wearying.
Intolerable.
Mm-hmm.
It's intolerable.
It is. And yet there's part of our mind that still chooses for it from time to time.
You know, it just keeps that personality self alive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Keeps the hamster wheel spinning.
It's the dream. It just keeps you in that dream.
Mm-hmm. And that's where, too, you know, we've talked a number of times about looking at our unwillingness. So when we, the moments that we can touch that there's part of us, part of our mind that doesn't want to let this go, that believes that we'll lose something, when we can, even if it's a fleeting second, a moment of touching that part that, you know, values that they're actually, you know, maybe this world can, you know, turn out okay. Maybe I can make this, you know, quite nice for myself. The moments that we can look at our unwillingness to heal are hugely helpful in our healing. Let's read the next paragraph. You cannot evaluate an insane belief system from within it. Its own range precludes this. You can only go beyond it, look back from a point where sanity exists, and see the contrast. Only by this contrast can insanity be judged as insane. With the grandeur of God in you, you have chosen to be little and to lament your littleness. Within the system which dictated this choice, the lament is inevitable. Your littleness is taken for granted there, and you do not ask who granted it. The question is meaningless within the ego's thought system because it opens the whole thought system to question. Comments? or what's coming up for anybody in this paragraph?
Go
ahead.
You cannot evaluate an insane belief system from within it.
Mm.
It's like not analyzing the dark, but going towards the light.
Right.
And from,
oh, I love
from
that.
From that part.
I love how you said that, not analyzing the dark, just going to the light. Makes me think of how the Course says it's not necessary to follow fear through all of its circuitous routes. We simply just have to, you know, again, be willing to look at everything with the Holy Spirit. We don't have to figure it all out by analyzing that darkness. Thank you for that, Tony. Paula, were you going to add something too?
No, that's just perfect. That's
mm.
really perfect. And that's the way out of it.
It is. It absolutely is. I really like that first sentence, too. You cannot evaluate an insane belief system from within it. You can only go beyond it and look back from a point where sanity exists and see the contrast. And I know we've all had so many of those moments of being able to clearly see the sanity versus the insanity.
Yeah, and I think the ego wants to judge that insanity, you know, because when you are looking back, well, if I had just done this or, blah, 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 you know, that voice.
Right.
That wears you out.
Yeah, and it's only by having those moments of being able to step back from that and see beyond it. That's why I just, you know, how the Course says an untrained mind can accomplish nothing, and you know, we're much too tolerant of mind wandering. That's where, you know, learning to even just have those tiny moments of stillness, even if they don't last very long, can be so helpful to sort of step out of it. And that's what that page 90 prayer does for me. It helps me step back. And page 90 in the FIP edition, FYI, we're throwing that around. I still don't know off the top of my head what page it is in the Sparkle edition, but I should memorize that.
It's also making me think of, I think it's chapter 30 where it's talking about the steps for making decisions.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't remember what the steps are off the top of my head. I know one of them is that you can at least decide what kind of day it is that you want, and another one is you can decide that you don't like how you feel. I don't remember how they go in order, but rules for decision, I think it's called.
Yeah, rules for decision, and it's basically like you decide what kind of day you have, but if you have any thoughts that are out of alignment with the day that you've already decided to have, take that to the Holy Spirit, and then in taking that to the Holy Spirit, you're led back to basically what it says on page 90, that you must have decided wrongly, and by looking at that, then your mind becomes open again to almost wiping the slate clean and starting over, and then you're back in alignment. I'm explaining it in a really short way, but it's really helpful.
Yeah, it is helpful. I'm glad you brought that up. So, yeah, if anybody wants to look that up, it's rules for decision, right? Does that sound
correct?
Yeah, okay, cool. I'll often use the PDF version of the Sparkle edition on my computer, or you know, they have the other editions online too, and you can just quickly type in your keywords and it'll come right up where it is. So it's easy to find things.
It's also, there's a part in there that says I make no decisions by myself.
Right, such an important step, right? Because otherwise, who's making the decision if we're if we're making it by ourselves? It's our ego. Again.
Right.
So we'll take the next paragraph now. Some nights we get through two paragraphs, and we're flying through tonight. So, okay. We said before that the ego does not know what a real question is. Lack of knowledge of any kind is always associated with unwillingness to know and produces a total lack of knowledge simply because knowledge is total. Not to question your littleness, therefore, is to deny all knowledge and keep the ego's whole thought system intact. You cannot retain part of a thought system because it can be questioned only at its foundation. And this must be questioned from beyond it because within it, its foundation does stand. The Holy Spirit judges against the reality of the ego's thought system merely because he knows its foundation is not true. Therefore, nothing that arises from it means anything. The Holy Spirit judges every belief you hold in terms of where it comes from. If it comes from God, he knows it to be true. If it does not, he knows that it is meaningless. And I'll pause there and then we'll read the last section. So this is kind of, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot here in this paragraph. This first section, the first part of this paragraph, we said before that the ego does not know what a real question is. Lack of knowledge of any kind is always associated with unwillingness to know and produces a total lack of knowledge simply because knowledge is total. So thinking about knowledge as the same as truth or heaven, that's a state where we know what we are truly, we know what God is truly, we know that love that we have seemingly forgotten. And so it's interesting to think about this, that lack of knowledge, and again, it's talking about that kind of knowledge of any kind, is always associated with unwillingness to know. So that, I think, is what I referred to earlier when I mentioned that piece about the importance of being willing to look at our unwillingness, because the only reason we don't know knowledge right now is because there are those scraps of unwillingness to know still in our mind. And that unwillingness to know might come from, again, at the deepest place, the Course says that it's that unconscious fear and guilt that we have, that we think that we killed God to make this, you know, separate, special place. We think we did something absolutely awful, and so that sort of fuels our unwillingness to, you know, look at that and to undo what we've done because we're terrified of punishment, of which, there is none, because we didn't do anything. But that sentence really stands out to me about the unwillingness, just because I know for me it's been so helpful with acknowledging where I'm unwilling and getting really clear about that and really honest about it. And I really like the next sentence too. Not to question your littleness, therefore, is to deny all knowledge and keep the ego's whole thought system intact. So if we're struggling in any way, shape, or form, yeah, and we don't question it, we're simply, it was saying here, we're just keeping the ego's whole thought system intact. We can question anything.
It's really about confidence, isn't it?
Confidence in
what in yourself,
we truly
are. In your abilities. Confidence in
I would say in yourself with a capital S.
Yes, in yourself with a capital S. Confidence in that life is supposed to be good for you. It's supposed to work out well for you.
For me personally, like, this applies to like everything I do, like every decision I make now in my life. And if I feel the slightest little bit of doubt or feeling unsure about something, I know there's part of my mind that's listening to my ego.
Exactly.
But if I feel like I just made a decision the other day and it was like immediate, I had no hesitation whatsoever. I made the decision and it was done. And there was no ounce of guilt or anything that came up. So I knew that I was with spirit then. And I think the more you have those moments, the more you know, like, where you're sitting, where you're located. Because we're supposed to have a life where we feel the second situation I described all the time. That's what God's will is for us. So for me, like, it's really helpful when I'm making decisions, if I feel that, you know, uncertainty, to just question that and uncover it and look at it until I feel at peace with whatever decision I'm making.
It's really helpful.
That really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super helpful, DJ. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm just sharing what has happened for me. So, yeah.
That's the most powerful place to teach from. That personal experience.
I love the idea, and I go to it often. I need do nothing. Because when I get into that, you know, those feelings of uncertainty, that's where I always go. I just stop it. I need do nothing right now. I need do nothing. And that's, you know, that's helpful to me, because then it just kind of lifts it. And things always work out, you know, always get straightened out. But I think, you know, the anxiety, staying in that anxious place is the biggest problem. You know, it's just let go. I need to do nothing.
I'm so glad you said that, Paula. And that reminds me of how my mom used to break that down. She'd say, I need to do no thing, because that's what nothing is, right? No thing.
No
thing. So if you think about it that way, I need to do no thing. So no thing out there except to turn to the Holy Spirit. So
yeah.
We need do nothing except that. We need do no thing except.
That's awesome.
That's powerful too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always liked that. It's very helpful way to think about it. Sometimes when we just like we've done on the call so many times with, you know, shifting out one word for the word love, we've done that with a number of different areas. It can really sort of drive the point. It's really helpful. So let's take the last paragraph here. Whenever you question your value, say, God himself is incomplete without me. Remember this when the ego speaks, and you will not hear it. The truth about you is so lofty that nothing unworthy of God is worthy of you. Choose then what you want in these terms and accept nothing that you would not offer to God as wholly fitting for him, for you do not want anything else. Return your part of him, and he will give you all of himself in exchange for your return of what belongs to him and renders him complete. I really like this paragraph for a number of different points. First of all, I just love the first sentence. Whenever you question your values, say, God himself is incomplete without me. What a low self-esteem buster that is.
Yeah.
And
that whole,
oh, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say that whole part of the course was a game changer for me.
Uh-huh.
That line changed my whole life when I read it.
This very line?
The God himself is incomplete without
me.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Aww.
That's really awesome. Oh, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, those are such powerful words.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because we live in a world that teaches the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're only as important as your credentials or how much money you're earning or what you look like, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This teaches us that we're important just because of, you know, what we are.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it reminds me of that line where it says, you know, nothing, it says something essentially that nothing that you do or think or say or make is necessary to establish your worth. Your worth is established by God.
I love that.
God himself is incomplete without me. Has anybody seen the movie Howl's Moving Castle?
No.
It's an animated film by a Japanese man. His name, it's escaping me. It's called Howl's Moving Castle, and it's actually another really good movie that I just really enjoy by the same, it's absolutely gorgeous. Again, it's animated, but the art in it is just beautiful. This other film that he did is called Spirited Away.
Oh, I've seen
it. But anyway, have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's something else.
I love it. And anyway, this is one of his earlier films, Miyazaki, I think is his last name. Anyway, it's called Howl's Moving Castle. And at the end of the film, spoiler alert, there's this flame, and the flame's name is, I don't remember, but the voice of this flame, it can talk and, you know, crack jokes and stuff. It's Billy Crystal's voice. And throughout the film, if the flame goes out, Howl, who is this, is he a prince or like a magician? He's something like that, a wizard. If the flame goes out, Howl dies. And at the end of the film, the flame goes out, and it turns out that that flame had Howl's heart in it. It wasn't something that the flame stole, but that seemingly kept this separate flame alive and going. It was only after that heart was, Howl took back his heart or was given back to him, that that spirit which was in that flame was sort of released, and again they came to know something that they were something much greater than they thought that they were. And that ending of that movie came forward for me with this very last sentence of this paragraph, because this really strikes me. It says, the very last sentence, the very first part, return your part of him, and he will give you all of himself in exchange for your return of what belongs to him and renders him complete. I know elsewhere in the Course it says that, you know, we think we stole a tiny piece of heaven in this, you know, fragmented, separated state that we seemingly think that we're in. And I think it references elsewhere, too, about, you know, returning that tiny piece of heaven that we think that we stole, you know, that we're not going to be punished for. So that just came forward for me again, too, because that really is powerful for me right there where it says return your part of him. So we're, you know, maybe afraid we're going to lose something by turning back to God, and yet all we're going to do is gain all of him, all of himself, it says, all of God in exchange for our return of what belongs to him and renders him complete. So there can only be gain there. I just thought that was really beautiful, and that movie example came to mind for me. So it's fun. Howl's Moving Castle or Spirited Away. Movie recommendations of the evening. So thoughts, questions, comments, examples about anything that we read tonight. We did lots and lots and lots of reading.
This was heavy.
mm-hmm.
This is a lot.
It is a lot. It's a lot, and yet it's so simple at the same time, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
It's good stuff.
You then have two conflicting evaluations of yourself in your mind, and they cannot both be true. That seems to be the biggest problem. That, you know,
That one evaluation
seems to be the ongoing. But, you know, honestly, the more you work with the Course, the more you work with the workbook lessons, it's such a wonderful thing, because it's just not, the contrast is just lessens, you know. The road certainly gets smoother.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. It absolutely does. Other comments or questions or thoughts or anything related or loosely related to what we read?
I was just thinking how interesting it is that the sections tend to really, I mean, there's so many examples this week of different situations I was in and making decisions and all these things that are relevant to what we read tonight. And just having that reminder and, like, it just helps me become more mindful of these things when they come up or when the ego is coming in. And it's really cool.
Mm.
I really like this section a lot.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Has everybody heard of Abraham Hicks from Hay House?
Oh, God, yeah.
I keep hearing them in my voice saying, because she talks about contrast a lot when she's channeling the source energy. And she says, like, as you're moving through the contrast, you're deciding what you don't want and what you do want. You're deciding what you don't want and what you do want. And for me, spirit is always what you want.
Yeah.
So when I feel like I'm in this, you know, that darkness that we were talking about earlier, where you feel icky and you know something is off, and you don't have to describe the feeling, you just know intuitively that that's how you feel. It's like knowing that contrast makes it so much easier for me to realign, because that contrast is there. I can go, oh, I feel icky right now, and that's not my truth, so I must be located in the TAS, or the ego. And so then I can choose to take myself out. And I'm getting so much better at it compared to where I was a year ago. Like, it's unbelievable. But just, it's really a blessing, because just knowing that contrast is what helps you decipher your feelings is just really, really helpful.
And it's not a bad thing. You know, the ego judges it as a bad thing. Oh, I've done something wrong. Oh, there's something wrong here. No, without the contrast, well, we'd probably be in heaven. But it is the way to heaven. There's no getting around it.
Well, it's just helping us decide for God, in my opinion.
That's awesome. That's a really very succinct and clear way of saying it, is that it's simply helping us decide for God.
I used to listen to a lot of Abraham Hicks, and I have probably 1,000 of their tapes. I know I haven't been getting them any, because sometimes it brings about a little bit too much contrast between the Course and what they're saying. Sometimes it makes me, you know, I get confused by it. So anymore, I'm just basically staying with the Course, because that just works the best for me.
All right. Well, it sounds like we're good. So any final comments, questions, insights? All right, we're good to go. Thank you, everybody. We'll resume next week. Have a great week.
You too.
Good night.
Bye.